Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, my conversation with James Lindsay. If you have any questions about CRT, Marxism, Hegelian dialectic, this was one of my favorite conversations I've ever had with James Lindsay, and I've had several. It's really fun. I love your thoughts. Email me freedom@charliekirk.com. This episode is worth texting to your friends and talking about. He's a really special thinker, and I'm honored to call him a friend. He's great. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Start a high school chapter, start a college chapter, tpusa.com. At tpusa.com, we are the battleship for freedom and liberty, tpusa.com. And get involved by supporting the Charlie Kirk Show as well at charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com. The wonderful andrewandtodd.com. So we were kind of putting together the event, and I saw, you know, Dr. Lindsay opening up our event on Friday evening. But honestly, that's not enough time to be able to learn everything you need to learn from Dr. Lindsay. I'm going to brag on Dr. Lindsay for a while here. I first met him in a podcast that Andrew set up. And thank you, by the way, all of you that listen to our podcast and subscribe and all of that. And Andrew's like, hey, you're going to love this guy, but he's an atheist liberal that doesn't believe in wokeism. And I was in a really bad mood. I was like, I don't want him on my show. Okay, I don't have the patience for this atheist liberal. Who does this guy think he is? And he comes on, and again, I was dealing with something else at the time, and he was so articulate, and he was so thoughtful. And I remember I texted Andrew, I said, there's no way this guy could be a liberal, right? He's way too enlightened. And that's one of my big critiques, honestly, is how we describe liberal and conservative. Honestly, if you're a patriot and a free thinker, I don't care, honestly, what you call yourself, right? As long as you're not a Marxist, then that's a separate issue. But James Lindsay, more than anybody else, has done the difficult work of showing what is critical race theory, wokeism, ESG, the philosophical underpinnings of it. He has, I think, the most important book out in America on this topic called Race Marxism. In fact, we're even thinking about partnering and doing kind of like a parent's guide of how to crush the woke so that every parent and grandparent can see. They love that idea. But what I love about James is how honest he is, and he comes at it from a completely different approach in the sense of he understands that these ideas will completely corrode our civilization from within. And so, James, welcome back up.
Thanks, Charlie. Actually, if you don't mind, I'd like to tell the story of how I – people ask all the time, so it's good to tell an audience, what was the moment that, you know, you kind of changed directions or whatever in this regard? And this was the thing. So a lot of people – I've talked to some of you. I've done my scouting research. Don't know that in 2017 and 18, and it kind of actually started in 2016 before that, a couple of colleagues of mine – and this is what the podcast was about – colleagues of mine and I did a project that was now known as a grievance studies affair. Well, what we did was we wrote a whole bunch of fake academic articles and submitted them to leading academic journals in gender studies and feminism, critical race, education, and a bunch of them got accepted. We actually wrote 20, and it turned out that 7 of them got accepted. 7 more were still under peer review, and then the Wall Street Journal found out about it and tattled. Yeah, so these papers... One of them, we literally took a chapter of Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, and we rewrote it. We took out where he's talking about we have to bring our movement, which became the Nazi Party, and we rewrote that as intersectional feminism. And we just made all the words work and put in some research, and we submitted that, and a social work journal accepted that. You know, it's like, no half measures, the crown of evil, you know, this whole thing. And they're like, yep, okay. And one paper, this is a little adult, but we got a good audience. We did a paper on saying that there's obviously a big problem on college campuses and culture with what's called rape culture, that we all apparently support rape, which nobody on earth really does. And support, I mean, there are rapists. But we said that if we studied the way that dogs have sex with each other at dog parks, that we could learn something about rape culture, and then what we could do is train men the way that we train dogs to stop rape. And that paper got accepted by a leading feminist geography journal and was given an award for excellence in scholarship. And so there were a bunch of these papers. We had another one just real quick that was fat bodybuilding, that the sport of bodybuilding allows for bigger bodies, but it discriminates against fat. And so that they have to add a category of fat exhibition for political purposes, or else it's a fatphobic sport. And so that got accepted by a journal literally called Fat Studies. You don't know probably that there is a journal called Porn Studies. We had a paper under review there, and you can imagine. But one of the papers we wrote was under a leading, this was the turning point moment. Hey, turning point, how about that? It was exactly the shape of this arrow. As it turns out, so one of the papers was for education, and we had submitted it to the leading feminist philosophy journal, which is called Hypatia, and it was under peer review when we finished, so it did not end up getting published yet. It probably would have. The peer reviewers wrote back after our first submission, and they said, "We love this paper. It's not ready yet. You got to develop it a little bit, but and there's a problem that you do have to fix." A very significant problem. So what we had done is we had written a paper that said to overcome privilege, what we have to do is we have to mistreat privileged students. So white kids, men, we have to mistreat them. In fact, it would be best if we never answered their questions. We invite them to listen and learn in silence. And in fact, we should have you sit on the floor in chains and get spoken over and get interrupted and blah, blah, blah. But we're going to do it with compassion because they're supposed to be funny, right? And they wrote back, the peer reviewers said, "We love this idea, but you can't use compassion because that will recenter the needs of the privileged." And I looked at that and I said, holy crap, this is a genocide in the making. And that's when I sat on it for a few weeks and thought about it. And I asked my wife if I could quit my job and dedicate all of my time full time to reading, studying, and delivering this message to people. Because I was like, nobody knows this. And this is going to end civilization. This is the logic of the end of civilization.
And you were a mathematics professor at University of Tennessee.
I had been. I wasn't at the time when we did that. But yeah, I was a mathematics professor at the University of Tennessee. I left the university in 2010 because I got sick of how they were trying to coddle the students. Nobody was allowed to fail. Everybody keeps their scholarship. Money, money, money. And I was like, I can't teach math like this. I don't want to keep doing it.
And so you then dive all the way into this and you realize that absent a couple articles here and there, people are not taking seriously this takeover of every major institution, of our children, of education, of finance, of sports, of language. And then 2020 happens. So Dr. Lindsay was doing all this research, and then Floydapalooza, you know, in the summer of 2020 unfolds.
The only known cure for COVID.
Right, exactly. Where if you're burning down a Wendy's, it's better than wearing a mask. And so really, large parts of the conservative movement, I use that term loosely, were completely taken by surprise, where all of a sudden everything was about race, it was about structural inequity, oppressor versus oppressed, and we are still living through the damage that was implemented from the summer of 2020. And I'm not even talking about the burned buildings, that is true. I'm talking about how they saw their moment to change curriculum, implement textbooks, take over HR departments, be able to change hiring practices, affirmative action quotas. They saw a 90-day window when everyone was locked down and cooped up, took over the entire PR narrative to really introduce, in my opinion, this is provocative and the media will find this to be, you know, newsworthy. I think that mind virus has done and will do more damage than the Chinese coronavirus.
Oh, absolutely. That's not even a question. And as a matter of fact, he calls it a mind virus. Let's exonerate him a moment and make the media have a slightly harder job. Just kidding. They'll ignore what I'm about to say. This is totally based, and this is one of the things I read in the literature writing those fake papers, is there is a paper that was published right here, Arizona State University, two professors, Breanne Foss and Michael Karger, if you want their names. We like to name names. They wrote this paper in 2016 called Women's Studies as a Virus. And in the paper, they explain that these ideologies like women's studies, and it could extend to gender or race or whatever you want it to be, are meant to operate. They said the ideal metaphor for what they do is a virus. They say an ideal metaphor for us would be viruses like HIV, Ebola, SARS. Some viruses cause cancer. Well, cancer represents true transformative change, so that's good too. Conservatism, they say, represents like the immune system. And normally you need the immune system to preserve the body, but in this case the virus will be good for the body, so we have to suppress the immune system. This is really how they describe themselves in their own words. And what they say, though, is exactly some of the stuff that you know that you've experienced and you've seen. They said what you have to do is you have to say it doesn't matter. We're going to get a kid to come into college and he's going to major in, say, biology. That's the example they give. And we're going to get him to take a couple of classes in women's studies. They specifically use a male as the example, and I don't know why. They're going to get him to study women's studies or gender studies or whichever, and then we're going to infect him, and he's going to be an infectious agent. So when he goes to graduate school, he takes it to that graduate department. When he gets a job at a lab, he's going to take it to that lab. And you can imagine that in every field, and in particular what they didn't say in that paper, but the field of education has been captured since the early 1990s at the very latest, maybe earlier, and they've been turning our teachers and our future school administrators into people whose job it is to, just like a virus, you guys, we all, thanks to COVID, know how viruses work. They inject their junk into the cell gets repurposed, it makes viruses instead of doing cell stuff. Well, what their goal is that they're going to inject their junk into the school, and all it's going to do is make more viral agents to spread the virus to more institutions and more people and more children. And so when you say mind virus, I said this is the logic of a genocide. You're talking about, this is the logic of unraveling civilization, and they have a viral program that they literally say is like AIDS because it suppresses the immune system, and that's the ideal metaphor they gave themselves, even here in Arizona, for what they want to do.
And that pathogen is so widespread and institutionalized. The good news, though, is that millions of Americans started to realize how sick we were, to continue the metaphor. So where did this come from? Why are my kids who are white in a local Arizona public school being treated differently just because of the color of their skin? And by the way, this is all throughout Arizona schools. I hope everyone understands this. They are lying to you at the Scottsdale School Board meeting. They're lying to you at the Chandler meeting. It is institutionalized. It is policy. And there's a lot of things we have to do to fix that here in Arizona. And we could talk about that, you know, as we continue. But what they're able to do, though, James, is they're very clever, because anytime you dare criticize them, they immediately pull the race card. They say, well, we want six-year-olds to have constructive conversations about race. Or they go to the accusation, which is their new one, because we always got to be on the front tip of messaging. They say, oh, what do you want, to ban books? And my response is always, yes, I actually do want to ban pornography for seven-year-olds. I mean, I'm actually really proud of that. So, and, you know, some liberal asked me, they said, well, Charlie, don't you think all opinions should be presented to students? I said, absolutely not. You think we teach bloodletting in biology class? It's an opinion. How about the flat earth theory when we're talking about, you know, whether or not how the earth is composed? Or how about the heliocentric theory of gravitational pull? Do we just say, you know, there's another theory where the earth is the center of our galaxy? We need to let all opinions be heard. Or do we teach young people when they're in a morality class or ethics class about eugenics? So today we're learning about some races being better than others. And this is just an idea. You can make up your own mind, seven-year-old.
Yeah, we don't teach the Jim Jones theory of making Kool-Aid.
And
we
so
don't do it.
So, James, how do we respond to that?
I mean, like, that is definitely one way. This is actually a point. What Charlie has done is the lean-in method, which I've noticed works really, really well. Anything they accuse you of, kind of lean into it.
That's right.
You'll notice that the Orange Man did that a lot, very, very successfully. It's a really good tool that actually puts them aback, because they're trying to get you on your heels. And if you just stand up and say, no, this is awesome, but let's talk about it and be sensible about it. We don't want to ban books. I want to ban books for seven-year-olds that are inappropriate for seven-year-olds. I don't want pornography. I don't want the Jim Jones theory of Kool-Aid making. I don't want certain kinds of things, and that's completely inappropriate. And it's, don't you want all viewpoints? So that's one thing that you can do. Another thing is, it's just like, you can point out literally that context matters. Context matters. A seven-year-old's in a captive situation. If you want to talk about it in terms of law and constitution, the state doesn't have freedom of speech. Do you not know in America that the people have freedom of speech and the state is the one that's restricted? These
that's
are things
right.
that you can remind people of.
Yeah, and so that's on the book banning issue. And you're right, I'm a lean-in guy, right? Because they hate it when you punch back twice as hard when they accuse you of something, or you accuse them of actually doing it. By the way, they are the book banners. I could prove it to you. When was the last time the Bible was allowed to be taught in local Arizona public schools? Like, oh, well, you know, we can't do that. Okay, let me get this straight. So you want to teach children that are 9 years old in Arizona schools about lesbian sex, but God forbid you would teach them about Proverbs, Psalms, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. Like, oh, no, well, we can't have that because we're absent of morality. So I'm a big lenient guy. So, but James, how do we respond when they play the race card immediately? Because, and I'll be very honest, this is a white guilt kind of phenomenon where white people have been guilted for no reason whatsoever to just do nothing and allow these incredibly miserable, deranged people to take over our country. Because, and it's mostly an upper middle class society, and I see this white guilt phenomenon spreading in Scottsdale like crazy, driving me nuts, right? Where, you know, the mom drives the Tesla, the kids to school, and she then, her whole day is like, I have to try to repent for all this wealth or something. James, and by the way, it's very powerful. White guilt is something that funded the BLM movement and has been the basis for this. When they play the race card, how do we respond?
All right, so let me actually add a book example for you, not just they are the book burners, you want one. This is a moment in photographic history that's been burned into my memory. They put out some propaganda. One Gavin Newsom, you probably heard of, put out some propaganda about how the conservatives want to ban books. And he's sitting there, legs crossed, looking all like, like I've read a book one time. Is he little glasses or something? He's looking at this book and he's reading this book, and this is on, he's got the stack of books on the table. This is the book that they want to ban, and it was To Kill a Mockingbird. They banned that book. No conservative wants to ban that book. They banned that book because of its depictions of race in the time period when
this was discussed. This is exactly right. They don't like To Kill a Mockingbird because they say it reinforces a white supremacist judicial construct of presumption of innocence and independent judiciary.
And that it
frames oppressed of what? White savior complex.
Yeah, they
because
banned that
that's
book.
Literally what they say. Because in the book, Atticus Finch comes and does something that only a white savior could do.
Yeah.
Messianic white savior complex. They banned to Kill a Mockingbird.
They do this all the time. And so don't let them call you out on that. And it's the same thing. If they pull out a name, I'm going to give you a definition of critical race theory that you've probably not heard. It's a very simple one. It's a very easy one to remember. Critical race theory is calling everything you want to control racist until you control it. So if they call you a racist, all that means is they want to control you. If they say this school is racist, that means they want control of how that school operates. If they say that our military is racist, that means they want to control our military. That's all it means. If they call you a homophobe, that's because they want to control you. If they call you a transphobe, that's because they want to control you. And so a lesson to practice. Now, you do want to have a little bit of savvy, but the thrust of the right answer is, so what?
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's right.
You can't, I mean, I literally would say that you can't control me that way. I'm not a racist, but even if I were, how am I wrong? So what? Why would it matter? And because what they're trying to do is conflate a moral argument, you're a bad person, with a you're wrong, which is a logical argument. They're trying to mix them together. And so what? You have to not care about the accusation, but what you really need to do is take another step beyond that and realize this is a person who's trying to manipulate and control a situation, trying to manipulate and control a social circumstance around me to make me look bad so they won't listen to me. And if you kind of just step up and say it, call it out, and say, you can't control me this way. What you're saying is not true, and I'm not going to put up with it. It really dispels it. It really dispels it.
Yeah, and they're not used to citizens having the conviction or the spine or the wherewithal to hold their ground when they receive an accusation.
What they want is, but I have a black friend.
Yeah.
And then they're going to get you with that.
Yeah, and that's where, again, kind of the turning point philosophy is, shut up, bigot. Like, very simple. You call them that. Like, actually, you're a bigot. And, oh, really, diversity is our strength? How did Martha's Vineyard work out? They spent like 42 minutes there. They called the National Guard. It's a hurricane. It's a tsunami.
What was it the NBC News said about it?
No, literally NBC News was like, this is a natural disaster. Then NBC News tweeted out, they had to delete the tweet. They said, imagine just going down the side of the street and dumping your trash on somebody else's yard. This is what NBC News says.
That's what NBC
about
said.
50 Venezuelans. Like, how about, pal, you come down into Hallis. We got 2,000 coming across the border every single day here in Arizona. So the point, I think you got to punch back twice as hard all the time, but not everyone is prepared for that. So at the least, then James, reject the premise.
Yeah,
right?
You have to reject the premise.
At the very least.
And just realize they're trying to control, their only reason they're saying that is because they know it can put power on you. I said in my talk last night that these people think they're wizards. They're using it as a magic spell to control you. And your magic spell back, if you play Dungeons and Dragons, I don't know if we do that, over here was dispel magic. You just reject the premise. There's no magic here. You're Gandalf. You shall not pass. It actually, you just stand up to it and say, I'm not going to do this. This doesn't, this trick, actually, it's really powerful. This trick doesn't work on me anymore.
That's right.
I'm going to say what I have to say. This trick doesn't work on me. You had me for a few years. I'm not doing this anymore.
And I, this is, in my opinion.
That's right.
And on our podcast, on our radio show, we call this the final phase for a reason. Because as the spell is breaking, as their mind control, their ability to be able to manipulate your behavior and action, the only thing they have left is handcuffs and leg irons. Because if they're not able to kind of control your actions by calling you the R word, all they have left is brute force. And that's actually a good sign because that's not sustainable. It isn't. Especially with people that have a memory of a free society. It's a very important thing. This is exactly why they want to have kids walking around with masks all the time. Having a memory of a country that used to be free is a very, very powerful thing. Nostalgia can drive you towards action. I remember a country that was free, and so do you. So I have something of a reference point that I want to restore, I could tell our kids about. This is exactly why in China, it's very, very hard to overthrow the CCP, because there is not a living person that remembers a free society in mainland China. They have no memory of a free society. So what are they supposed to restore back to? It takes a long time, and this is exactly why Iraq was not able to become this beautiful constitutional republic. All they've known is Islamic theocratic fascism for the last 1,400 years. It's a long process to get you to self-government. And so with that being said, they want, as the spell is breaking, because I believe it is breaking, as we're actually getting them to be on defense, they get to a place where they're like, all right, let's pull the ripcord. We took over the FBI 40 years ago. Let's use it. And that's not going to end well for them. They know it doesn't end well for them. It's unpopular in a somewhat free society that we live in to just use brute force all the time. You're going to end up losing, James.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I tell people this a lot. A very simple definition of a free society or a free classically liberal society, a very, very simple definition is that nobody has the authority to use force first, including the government. Nobody has the right to use force first. And people who understand that in their bones, like American patriots understand that in their bones, nobody has the right to use force first. When you unmask them and they can't use their word games and you defeat their mid-level violence provocation, that's the name for it in political warfare, is a mid-level violence provocation, they have to use force and then they look illegitimate. As a matter of fact, that's why they use mid-level violence. Let me tell you what mid-level violence is. You need to know this. They do it verbally. Antifa does it in the street. If you think Antifa is a bunch of wild thugs, you do not understand Antifa. They train. They are a well-trained force. They are a militia. And they know how to use what's called mid-level violence. And here's what mid-level violence is. It's, I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. And if Charlie sits there and takes it, I just owned him. The word that conservatives have used for a little while is cuck. If Charlie slaps my hand, I'm like, he hit me. And what Antifa does is they do, I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. And the second somebody just like brushes their hand down, just that, they got it on film. He hit me. And they have that 6 seconds where it looks bad for Charlie, and they don't look like they weren't doing anything. They don't have the 35 minutes of poking him first on film. And they show that, and the media eats it up, and they create a reflexive narrative that runs through the whole thing. So this mid-level violence game is what they do. It's a provocation where they put one toe over the line, like putting a drag queen in the school. It's not a stripper. It's a drag queen. They're not actually stripping like at the bar in Dallas. They're reading a story. They put one toe over the line. And if you react, they point out your reaction and use it against you. Because they know whoever uses force first loses. They know that, and they're trying to provoke it. So if you stay calm and you stay centered and you say, look, this isn't going to work on me, but we're also not going to do this. We're going to make sure that you stop doing this. What you're doing is illegitimate. And you can actually show the game. People see through it, and you gain the moral upper hand, and they lose it, and then you can start winning every time.
So there's two topics I want to get to before we do some questions, and I know a lot of you probably have questions for James on this topic. The first, I want to talk about the military, which I think does not get enough focus on how these ideas have infiltrated our fighting force. And the second, I want to talk about, finally, queer theory, which is very, very important, which does not get enough emphasis. And in fact, as much as people are willing to kind of fight on CRT, a lot of upper middle class white society's like, but I'm okay with my 8-year-old learning about lesbianism. Like, whoa. You have no idea what queer theory is, folks. And some of you might believe that marriage is not between a man and a woman. I believe it is a man and a woman, but you have to understand, even if you hold that view, queer theory is from literally the pit of hell. And James, as someone who's not a Christian, even agrees with that, that he said, quote, James, what is it? If there was a Satan, he would design queer theory?
I said that, and I said that the queer theory opens the gates to hell.
There you go.
When you unleash it into a society.
But let's start with the military, because I think that interests a lot of people, and I don't think it's getting enough coverage. 2 million man hours dedicated to retraining our military CRT. Mark Milley saying that white rage and white supremacy is the greatest threat within our own military. Our military is being demoralized. We're not hitting our recruitment goals for the first time since the Vietnam War. Military enrollment is down 14% to 18%, depending on the branch. James, talk about how all this is connected.
I mean, they're making Air Force cadets do their jogging carrying a pride flag. I mean, that's not the American flag. That's stuff colonizers do. That's literally what the British Empire did when it marched into India. It was like, no, you're going to fly this flag now. That's not the American flag. No. And so what the objective here is, you said the word, is demoralization. And this has come up from several people at this conference already. So you already know what it means. It's to drive to make people quit. And that's what they want to do. This is a strategy in Marxist, strategy. This is a tool in Marxist strategy called entryism. It's sometimes called entrism. It's entering into an institution and taking it over. So what you do is you make the good people, they're doing this in the schools too, you make the good people want to quit by making it intolerable to be there, or you press them out with some kind of a mandate that they're not going to abide by, and then you refill the ranks with people who are going to be compliant to you. This is why they're defunding the police. They're going to refund the police when it's going to be diversity, equity, and inclusion hiring only. It's to push people out who might do the right thing if the moment comes, and to demoralize the force so that it won't have that strength, that character, that unity that it needs to be able to do the job that it needs to do. And they are very effective. I'll tell you a demoralization trick they pulled. This is straight out of Mao. They did this in our military. Matt Lohmeyer told me about this in pretty good detail on a podcast we did together. If you don't know who Matt Lohmeyer is, he's the Space Force commander.
He's great.
Yeah, that flew F-15s before that and got relieved because he wrote a book exposing the Marxist infiltration in our military. And he did do the chain of command thing first. He didn't just go rogue. And then they relieved him of his duty. And so Matt told me that what they did is, you know, we had this extremism stand down. They told all the military, well, there's all this white supremacy. We're going to have these extremism stand down moments. We're going to have all this training, blah, blah, blah. There's all this white supremacist, all these white supremacist groups are on the rise. And it turns out that other than the old school KKK, can you name a white supremacist group? Probably not. Nobody can. So it turns out that on a bunch of those .mil computers and on a bunch of those IP addresses, they were like white supremacist groups in America for a couple of months. And then the extremism stand down comes and they said, here's this graph showing searches just within the military alone of white supremacy groups in America. And look at this spike in just the last few months after they introduced it. That's what Mao did in what was called the 100 Flowers campaign, the Bai Hua, which what that means is that he said, let 100 flowers bloom. And he said, we're going to have free speech in China. Speak. You don't like the government. You don't like my regime. Tell everybody. Speak up. And he waited about a year or two, and he killed everybody who spoke up at the end of it. He cut all the flowers off. That's exactly what they did in our military. That's a Maoist technique. So our military is in bad shape. It's a very, very dangerous situation. And these are straight-up Marxist tactics that they're using to co-opt the most powerful, most important fighting force on this planet. And if you don't realize the gravity of that, you got to open your eyes.
And this is so profound what James just said. He articulated it better than I think anybody in the country, where he says, we want the good ones to quit, defund it, and then resupply them with loyal Soviet agents. Boy, is that what they're doing, right? Vaccine mandates, schools, because the good ones, how many people here have quit a job, defected? Like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. They put you on the outskirts. They debank you. They censor you. They silence you. They ostracize you. They label you as semi-fascist. You're on the fringes. You're a domestic violent extremist. And then they resupply the power organizations, the colleges, the FBI, the DOJ, Google, Goldman Sachs, with people that are then loyal to that very regime. And James, you just touched on something that is so really important that I want to reemphasize, which is they, being the left, are now unilaterally fascinated with state power. Now, you might say that's always been the case, That isn't the case. The Democrat Party in America and the liberals used to have a tension point, and James used to be part of this, where you had kind of the Dennis Kucinich wing, the anti-war wing, where they legitimately thought that government should supply a lot of resources to people, you know, help with social welfare benefits. But when it comes to domestic surveillance, when it comes to foreign wars, that's something that will hurt us. Now, they came from kind of a tradition of the Black Panthers and many other revolutionary groups in the 60s and 70s, literally being...
I just went to college for a long time.
Yeah. You say what?
I just went to college for a really long time.
No, but literally being infiltrated by the FBI and the DOJ and J. Edgar Hoover in the 60s and 70s. And so legitimate Marxist revolutionaries, you can still talk to them. They'll be like, back in the 70s, the FBI stopped our Black Panther. Like, yeah, that's not totally true. But there is some truth that the original Black Panthers were actually very, very peaceful. And that there's documents to show that the feds infiltrated a lot of these groups, escalated the language, elevated and promoted. I'm more on board for that theory than any other time in history, by the way, given what I just learned about federal agencies and what you have in the last 18 months, right? I used to think that stuff was all a bunch of nonsense. I'm like, it actually might be true that our government infiltrated some of these groups and actually made them violent and made them uncharacteristically more likely to be belligerent. And I'm sure there's more nuance to that story, but there is documents that show the FBI infiltrated these groups. But the point is this, is that in the 70s and 80s, liberals used to be like, yeah, live and let live. And then some people on the left would be more kind of authoritarian, statist, Stalinist. The entire American left has been taken over of worship of the state. And it is this incredibly confusing, and it's confusing for a reason. It's a term that Sam Francis coined, that you're not allowed to talk about Sam Francis because people call him a racist. Like, okay, whatever. And it's the most brilliant description of what they're going towards. And believe it or not, I actually independently came to a far less, let's just say, appropriate term. About 10, like 5 years ago, I was out in San Francisco. I was like, man, there's a simultaneously blend of anarchy and tyranny happening at once, where I'm walking the streets of San Francisco. If you defecate, do drugs, or if you kidnap somebody, you're not getting arrested. But if you misgender somebody, they're going to come and find you and destroy your job. And Sam Francis called it anarcho-tyranny. Beautiful term, right? And so this is where we're at right now, where they give you fake, self-indulgent, pleasure-seeking freedom. It's fake freedom. Drugs, sex, prostitution, whatever makes you feel good, increase the dopamine and the serotonin. But any actual freedom, things that pursue virtue, build a family, worship your creator, is disallowed by the state. And that's where it really confuses people. Like, we're freer than ever before. No. You might have a more licentious, hedonistic country than ever before, where you could do the stuff that's actually bad for you. Like, oh, I could go do weed and go to a strip joint. Meanwhile, you know, if I dare not get a vaccine, my entire life is going to be destroyed. I can't go eat in a restaurant. You couldn't for Los Angeles for some time. So, James, talk about how now the entire American left has basically agreed that the state is now the vehicle. We must worship the state. We must use the state. It's all about power. And this idea of kind of the old liberal of live and let live, it's now, no, live and let us rule.
Well, okay, so it turns out this is a Marxist thing. And so anarcho-tyranny is a word. What you're experiencing there is a word. There was a word for this in the 1960s. The guy I mentioned last night, the arch-communist of the 1960s, Herbert Marcuse, wrote an essay in 1965 by the title Repressive Tolerance. And so what he said is that our society is tolerant, but it's repressive tolerance. The conservatives repress everything that they don't really want to be free, like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Exactly these things Charlie was just referencing. And so they have this whole repressive system that they claim is tolerant, but the tolerance is extremely limited. And so he said what we're going to have in the answer that we're living in now is what he called liberating tolerance, which is literally, in his own words, the punchline sentence is three paragraphs or so from the bottom. It's the first sentence, is that liberating tolerance would mean toleration being extended to movements from the left and being withdrawn from movements from the right. He doesn't mince words. That's actually how he phrases it. I'm not paraphrasing. That's actually the sentence. He's explicit, and he explains why violence from the left is okay, violence from the right, or even the thought of violence from the right is not okay. And in fact, he says that the right doesn't just have to have tolerance withdrawn, it has to be censored, and not even just censored, pre-censored, so that the thought can't even enter their head of anything that might be reactionary or preserving of the society that they live in. And so there's another name for this, which is liberating tolerance or repressive tolerance. I don't care which one people use. And this is the world that we live in. We live in Herbert Marcuse's world. He was the godfather of the left of today. All those 60s radicals who are the big power, Angela Davis, all these big power brokers that are in their 60s and their 70s and their 80s now, who are running college departments, they're running colleges, all of those guys were devotees of this guy 50 years ago. He was the hottest thing going. His books are selling 300,000 copies in the 60s. I mean, he was the biggest deal. And they're still referencing him. This is the world that we live in. And so this idea that they've created a false freedom while doing this is exactly what they do. Now, why is it so embedded in the state? Well, besides the fact that, of course, Marcuse is a Marxist and therefore the state, this is what I was talking about last night when I was saying this is a religion. And you have to understand, Hegel's view of religion that Marx took to another level is that you have a perfect idea of the world, and that's like God the Father. In fact, he called it the absolute idea and identified it with God. And then below that is you have how that comes into the world in practice, in the material realm. And that, in Hegel's own words, his exact words is, the state is the divine idea as it exists on earth. Now, if you're a Christian, you know what the divine idea as it exists on earth was or is transcendently. The state plays the role of messianic savior for them. Their belief, if you understand that this is an old Gnostic magical religion, is that the state is the demiurge. It is the thing that has the power to create the world that you want to have. Actually, it's a demonic world. And then that world is the new situation that people live in that creates the spirit of the world that they live in. And then they fight against that, and then there's a revolution that gives birth to a new idea. This is Hegel's idea. Hegel says that the idea gives birth to the state. The state actually, if you listen to Marx, what did he say? The state is going to assume absolute power. There'll be a dictatorship of the proletariat. Lenin went on to say that true communism will arise when the state reaches its zenith, its maximum of power, at which point, in Marx's words, it will wither away of its own accord. It will self-sacrifice. The state in the leftist religion that nobody knows is a religion because they tucked all the religious and magical elements, and it is a magician heresy religion, into economics and politics where you don't see it as spiritual any longer. That's what Marx did. The state is the element that is the savior, the messiah, and it comes and it goes and it comes and it goes cyclically over and over and over again in a cyclical process of death and rebirth where you're reborn, your society is reborn more and more and more socialist on each turn. That's why they worship the state. And when they start to lose, they start getting very explicit about it. Plus, unfortunately, they've miseducated. They say we have whitewashed education. We have redwashed education. We have educated our children for a generation or two, certainly the millennials, certainly Gen Z, certainly whatever they're calling the centennials. They get demoted from the millennials, the next one down. They only get 100 years behind them, I guess. Anyway, whatever this next, they're certainly indoctrinating them to believe that, as I heard in a podcast just the other day, or a recording on the news just the other day, somebody sent me, this young woman's talking, and she says, everything that's a necessity of life, and she's like, food, shelter, medical care, education, internet, clothing, yeah, everything should be paid for by the government. It should be free. Now, notice her stupid contradiction. It should be paid for by somebody, but free. Uh-huh. Somebody's missing a detail. Somebody's missing an important point. But what they see is that the state becomes the vehicle to save them. And this is why you saddle them with gigantic amounts of student loan debt, and then you get the government to write a gigantic check to bail them out of it. This is why you saddle them, we want to talk about queer theory, with transgender injury and destruction of their body. Absolute destructions of their bodies and their minds, so they're going to be very expensive pharmaceutical patients for the rest of their life, also with, you know, your vax subscription you're going to need. And what are they going to lobby for? Federal government paying for it. Socialized medicine. And now you have an entire lobbying base for a socialist policy. But history uses people and then discards them. So what do you think they're going to do with those people after they get their policy agenda? And this is a pitiful story. This isn't an angry story. This is a sad story. These people are being used. But this is why they've been induced to worship the state as their savior, literally as the Christ figure of a demented, upside-down, perverted religion that they don't even know that they're worshiping because they think it's about politics and identity and all this other junk. It's horrifying.
I wish every pastor in America understood this, right? I mean, seriously.
I can tell you they would not say, any pastor who understood this would not say, well, we can bring critical race theory into this church as an analytical tool subordinate to Scripture. They wouldn't say that. What they would say is that if we bring this demonic tool into our church, it will subordinate Scripture. This is a totalizing ideology. That's what Robert Lifton, who studied the Maoists, and he's a bit of a leftist himself, so you can't rely on everything. But in the 60s, he wrote this book called Thought Reform and the Psychology of Totalism, a Study of Brainwashing in China. And so he studied people straight out of Mao's prisons in Hong Kong. He went to Hong Kong. They exile you after they let you out of the brainwashing prison. And he studied them and he documented it. And what he said is, I lost my train of thought.
Mao.
Lifton. I got Mao and Lifton. No, what was I talking about before that? Because this is super important. Totalizing. That this is a totalizing ideology. In other words, it must fill every crack of your psychology. It must enter into every aspect of your emotional, physical, and spiritual life. There is no higher purpose, or as we would call it if we were Supreme Court justices caring about ruling this as a religion, we would say there is no higher duty of conscience than to fulfill the demands of this ideology. There's to be no deviation, no free thought, absolutely nothing. This is to be the new, absolutely, supremely reigning religion of the world that everything else has to serve in its own way. And if a pastor doesn't understand what they're bringing into their church when they're bringing this in, they need to wake up now and they need to stand because they, as I said at the Turning Point Faith Conference, Pastors Conference, they're the last bulwark that this country has against evil and tyranny, and they need to wake up.
Amen. So we'll get to questions here. Let's just do really quick. You mentioned it briefly. Queer theory. What is it? Why should people care?
Yeah, queer theory. Why is all this trans stuff happening? Sorry, I won't go all deep with you and get into the hermetic magic, I promise. Queer theory is a Marxist theory of normal. Okay, so Marxism is a Marxist theory of rich. If you're rich and you're powerful, you have economic stuff, then he says that stratifies society. There's the haves and the have-nots. They're intrinsically at war. The underclass has to awaken and go to war with the overclass. Imagine that the special kind of property isn't capital. That's what Marx was obsessed with, money, capital, material wealth. Now shift out, abstract out in your mind just a little bit and say, well, what's a different kind of property? Well, there's a paper from 1993 called Whiteness as Property, from the critical race theory literature. So whiteness is a kind of property. What do you get if you redo Marxist theory with whiteness as the property? You get critical race theory. That's why I called my book Race Marxism. So what if it's being allowed to be considered normal? Being normal, not being a weirdo, not being a freak or a pervert in particular. That's queer theory. Or a groomer. Yeah. I should have worn my OK Groomer shirt. I have that too.
Yep.
Don't mess with Texas, ESG people. Don't mess with Texas. That's an aside. But no, if you consider that the people who are normal get to decide what counts as being normal and what doesn't, and they get to enforce that on everybody and get to exclude people who are freaks and weirdos and perverts and want to dress up as puppies or whatever, like the guy in the White House that runs our nuclear waste.
That's right.
That's a very real thing.
That's real.
The person running our nuclear operation is a total
pervert.
Thank you.
I mean, that's a term of art in their literature. I'm not calling him a name, or I am. But anyway, the people who decide for themselves, we're the normal ones and we're going to exclude them. And then they create an entire theory where that is the property. That's the capital. Normalcy capital. The more normal you are, the more of it you have. That's queer theory. So anything that is abnormal, anything that challenges normal, anything that disrupts normal, or in their word, anything that complicates the normal is what queer theory is about. So what is a woman? Well, they've complicated the definition of woman. We all know what a woman is. But they've made it complicated. Why? And this is the key point nobody pays attention to. What did Ketanji Brown Jackson say when she was asked by Marsha Blackburn, what is a woman? She said, I don't know. I have to ask a biologist. In other words, she did a transphobia, but she's on the left, so they let it fly. In other words, I have to ask an expert. I have to defer to an authority to tell me what a woman is. I can't trust what I see, like Steve Bannon said last night, for myself. I have to ask an expert. And that's what this is all about. And that's what queer theory is all about. Queer theory is making sure that children, young children, don't know if they're a boy or a girl or what it means to be a boy or a girl. They don't know if they're straight or gay because they complicated the notion of being straight. They complicate anything to do with sex, gender, and sexuality, health status, mental health status, so that nobody can be quite sure of what they are and they have to defer to an expert. So if Charlie right now said, guys, And maybe he's pulling a stunt. You guys all have heard of Zuby probably, or some of you have. He's a guy in England that he identified as a woman for 5 minutes and deadlifted. He's real strong, and he deadlifted the world record of women's deadlifting. And then he said, "I'm not a woman anymore," after he was done with it, like 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever. And they were like, obviously, that's not legitimate. Or if Donald Trump had walked out and said, "I identify as the first transgender woman president of the United States," ha, ha, ha. They would have said, not legitimate. Why? Because they are the experts. They're the Gnostics, the wizards who get to decide when that claim's real and when it's not real. And that means they have total power over you. And that's what queer theory is actually about.
And it's happening in almost every school, TikTok. Parents, please do not allow your kids to get on TikTok. It's not a joke. Grandparents, not let your kids get on TikTok. It'll destroy their soul. It is the most depressed, anxious, suicidal, medicated generation in history because we decided to give them a digital pacifier, which I believe is actually more harmful in some ways than cocaine and heroin to a young person. And we just give them these devices. And the neurological studies that are coming out, in 20 years, we're going to look back and we say, what were we doing? And I'm telling, TikTok is a Chinese Communist Party psychological operation, mind infiltration, that you might like, oh, my kid's fine. He's just flipping through, or she is looking at these videos. It's literally creating tics in young girls, literally. And you could go look up at all the literature. It's all there. And that's where this trans stuff, by the way, is given massive platforms. And the Chinese Communist Party knows what they're doing. They promote the very ideology, though, that's going to destroy our country, so that our eight-year-olds, because our parents give them these devices, which should never happen, they're looking at this and they say, oh, well, maybe I'm trans. James, am I right on here on this?
You are. And all the videos, from what I hear, I've not seen the Chinese TikTok, but in China, all the videos they promote are of scientists and engineers.
Or masculinity femininity. All the Chinese videos they promote domestically are about what we would call like strong, patriotic, conservative values, weightlifting, taking care of your body.
Yep.
They don't allow the trans stuff in China.
And you know, by the way, that of course everybody knows the Chinese is a gigantic surveillance state, right? And they've got those cameras and facial recognition software and yada, 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 right? Okay, so you're going to let the data pipeline doesn't close down because it's in an American phone. Of course, that's what they built it for. In fact, there's reports now saying that TikTok is actually a Chinese CCP malware. And your child is making videos of themselves from every angle.
So they got all your kids' biometrics.
They know what your kid looks like from every single angle. You think
they can't believe how easy it is. They're laughing. I mean, Trump used to say they're laughing at us.
They can't believe.
They're like, wow, we created an app and every American parent lets their kid just give us all their access. I guess it's, you know, easier than making your kid read or something.
And anyway. That's by the way, tapped into queer theory, because what that is how you feed a young individual's narcissism. Their love for self, their love for the image of themselves, which, by the way, goes back to the hermetic thing, but we won't do that right now.
But that's why they end up so depressed by the time they're 17 or 18, because they're only thinking about themselves. They're not thinking about duty, obligation, purpose, relationship. They're only thinking about themselves all day long, which creates a highly depressed people. You are not designed by your creator to think about yourself all the time. It will drive you mad. Okay. So I do want to get to a couple questions here. I don't know the best way to do this. I think we have some mic runners. But I just want to say, we got to make sure this speech gets in front of millions of people that James Lindsay just said, right? So for everyone watching online, if you guys want to help make that happen, you guys get a booklet in return, tpusa.com, gift of any amount. We'll send this booklet to you. James, we're going to try to bring you on tour, do all this stuff. And as I mentioned, we're going to hopefully, this is still in the planning phases, but it's a working title, potentially work with James on an entire program for millions of parents, a parent's guide of how to crush the woke and CRT. I think that'd be pretty amazing, right? So, okay, let's get to this line up for some questions. Thank you, Austin, for doing that. I love your shirt. Socialism sucks. I love it.
This question is for James. Regarding mid-level violence and the example of pointing your finger in my face, what if we're at the dinner table or the card table and someone is praising the vaccine? I'm just giving that as an example. How do we enter the conversation?
I mean, this is an ugly conversation. I've been told by a family member that I belong in a concentration camp because I'm not vaccinated. So I can't promise you it's going to go well. I can't assure you. And I will actually tell you, a lot of people get this backwards and put it in your head. You got to think about this. It's going to save you a lot of anguish. And I can speak from personal experience. You think that your family members should listen to you. more than anybody else. You're so close. They should hear you. They think the same thing. And so it's actually the most contentious, most damaging arguments that you will get in and the least resolvable. Your brother, your child, your mother is the least likely to be able to hear you out because they expect you're going to hear them out too. Now, you have to stand your ground. That's why I ended up getting told by a family member I belong in a concentration camp. I know I'm not doing that. And in fact, I even told, I won't say which family member it was, I don't want to have this conversation, frankly. I'd like to have a more pleasant conversation with our time together. But what you're actually looking at, this is a form of kind of psychological mid-level violence, but there's a technique that's being used that's called renormalization. So renormalization is where you get an absolutely obstinate person who has an opinion. We could use the vaccine as an example. It's easier because I read the book on it with this example of a vegan. Somebody in your family decides that they're vegan, they're never going to eat meat again, and you have the option, are you going to make one meal or two? And it's just harder to make two meals. So eventually you're just cooking vegan meals with chicken on the side and you're not mixing it in. And then eventually you're like, eh, I don't even feel like making the chicken on the side. And now the whole family's vegan. But then there's a neighborhood barbecue and they're like, well, the Joneses are all vegan. So now we've got to make sure that there's like barbecued pineapple and some jackfruit. Pulled jackfruit instead of pulled pork. And then the neighborhood starts sliding toward at least full acceptance of this. And this is exactly the kind of mentality that I've witnessed with the absolute inability to recognize people's personal decisions regarding the vaccine. I don't think that anybody should, whatever you feel about it, whether you got it for whatever reason, I don't care. I think that that should have been a personal decision that you got to make. Now, personally, I wish I would have done more to discourage people from getting it. Now that we're seeing what happened, and many of us saw this coming. But fine, it's a personal decision between you and your doctor as a consultant, not as an authority. But they don't want it that way. They want it to be a community obligation. If they're Christian, they'll invoke, well, this is love thy neighbor, to take care of each other. This is a renormalization tactic. And all you can say is this, I can't participate in that. And if it's a close relationship, I strongly urge, you know, I don't participate. Stand your ground, make your statement and say, I really think we should just talk about other stuff. You don't have to have the conversation with people that are close. That network of relationships and something that overcomes the politics is so important in an environment where they're tearing families apart.
Yeah. And I found at least what's somewhat helpful. If you're dealing with an honest broker, that's the most important thing. If you're not dealing with an honest person or someone who's never going to hear what you have to say, then forget it. Or listen to what I have to say, just dismiss it. It's not worth your time. That goes for family members. That goes for friends. If people are not going to honestly listen and really internalize it and entertain it, your time is way more valuable than to talk to somebody who's just going to play ping pong back and forth and irritate you and provoke you. But I will say this, something that they do to us that we are getting better at is they always use experts, 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 right, James? Yep. Well, guess what? Because of the urgency of the moment, and thanks to just, I think, the Lord rising up some courageous voices, we have an A-team, all-star team of experts that you don't have to do the arguing for. You just say to your friend, hey, next time we're going to talk, just listen to 1 hour of Dr. Robert Malone, and then let's have a conversation, right? I mean, now all of a sudden what you've done, you've made yourself all of a sudden distanced from the argument. You can lean on their credibility, lean on their expertise, lean on their resume, lean on their ability to be forceful. I didn't say it's not just Malone, it's McCullough, it's Dr. Harvey Risch, it's all these incredible people. And yeah, exactly, Dr. Pierre Corey, thank you. And now it's not just about you, it's now about a roster, a team, a community of people that, and all of a sudden it's like, wait a second, look, I'm not an expert. But when all these really credentialed people, including Malone, who actually created the technology behind the mRNA vaccine, are so forceful and using such incredibly, you know, let's just say charged language, maybe they know something that's worthy of consideration. You've just completely changed the debate to be about you, to be about all of a sudden a community of experts that they're going to try to have to indict. Like, oh, they're conspiracies. Like, hold on a second. Wait a second. Are really Dr. Pierre Corey, who's one of the most amazing pulmonary doctors on the planet who won awards, is a conspiracy theorist? What did he gain through all of this? Or McCullough or Malone? And so that would just be my one piece of advice. I find that to at least be somewhat helpful in moving the ball forward to enlighten some people. Okay, next question.
Okay, this is not really a question. It's a testimony. The Lord is sending me here today. I came through the door looking for you and asked to see if I could speak to you, and they said, that's not possible. I don't know if that's possible. Okay. I said, everything's possible with the Lord.
Okay.
So I come here. I'm sitting right there. This gentleman walks up in front of me and says, get up there and tell him what you think, what's going on.
Okay, super quick because we got a long line.
Okay. I've been wondering what the Lord has for me in store for me for a long time. I just said, I'll wait and I'll wait. Last Sunday night, I woke up to a voice with an ask from the Lord. I swear I never heard of his voice before. And I know if you do what the Lord asks, you're blessed. And if you don't do what he asks, you're cursed. So I did what he asked all week. I end up here. I'm here to tell you that I'm dedicating myself to this cause. And I have all kinds of time. I wake up every day without an appointment.
Okay.
All right? And instead of defeating this reset, I want to destroy it.
Great.
Now,
so you want to help? All right. So how many young people are you mentoring? One. Good. Make it 10. Okay. Who are your local school board members? There you go. Get to know them. Who's your mayor? Okay, well, get to know your mayor, right? This is important. You want to defeat the Great Reset? Take over your school board, take over your mayor's office, mentor 10 young people, right? And then spend an hour a day with your phone off and read something that was written before you were born by somebody that knows more than you do. Okay? Thank you, sir. And then we'll talk afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. The event has been great. Charlie, last night you said that everybody in the room agreed basically on two things, that we all believe in God and that we are not God. You're sitting next to a man who just a little while ago you said is not a Christian. I know that James has written some books quite critical of Christianity. What would you, the question for either one of you, what would you say to we secularists, those who don't necessarily believe that America was founded on Christian values? We read Thomas Jefferson, who is the primary author of the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights. Of course, he edited the Bible down to a quick pamphlet. Where is our place in this fight? We would like to have a place as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're always welcome aboard the truth train, right? But I would say, look, America is undoubtedly a Christian nation, was founded as such, right? And look, I'll just give you some. And by the way, you're welcome here, and thank you for being here, right? 55 out of 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Bible-believing, church-attending Christians. John Adams, you know, was very, very clear, spoke fluent Hebrew, and said, you know, the United States Constitution, America, was founded by and for a holy and religious people. It is wholly inadequate for the people of any other. George Washington was a devout and very, very, focused Christian. Not to mention how America actually came into existence was more than just Thomas Jefferson. It's who mentored them and who actually laid the foundation for it, which was the Black Robe Regimen, right? It was the sermons of Jonathan Edwards and Mayhew and George Whitefield that laid the entire foundation of anywhere between 40 to 50,000 sermons that talked about how God, not King George, should actually be the person in charge and should be the head of your government, all these different things. God is mentioned four times in the Declaration of Independence. It was a huge leap forward to even mention laws of nature and nature's God. We pledge all these things through our Creator, go on and so forth. But I will say this, that all of that put aside, despite the fact that America was a Christian nation, that every single state by state had Christian laws, not just the federal government. What is your place? What is James's place? Look, we need to build coalitions for liberty and for truth, right? And so liberty is God's idea, not man's idea. You might say, hey, it's man's idea. Okay, guess what? We need people that are saying things that are true. The scriptures say, Philippians 4:8, whatsoever is true, whatsoever is beautiful, think on these things, whatsoever is praiseworthy. And if James, who I consider to be the world's most expert on these issues, we might have some theological differences, is going to come here and just drop the bomb on the evil people. Are you kidding me? You know what it's like saying, some people say, Charlie, how dare you, you know, have someone who doesn't believe in God at an event? I say, okay, do you all of a sudden when you step on an airplane say, hey, I only have Christians as pilots? Or when you have heart surgery, you say, I only have Christians as heart surgeons? No, you want the most qualified and you want the best for your mission, for your goal. And I could say this, I wish American Christians had as much clarity, wisdom, and courage as James Lindsay does.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you.
I'll actually add a little piece, and I'll be very brief, but you said it. It doesn't matter if you don't believe in God, you don't believe you are God. Their religion is that man, as a collective, one man, as a collective, has forgotten that he's God, that he's his own creator. If you don't think you're God, you're on the right side. That's all it takes. If you don't believe there's a God, you don't think you're God.
That's right. And by the way, just to finish it up, all are welcome. I mean that. As long as you're not a Marxist, then we got something to talk about. God bless you. See, get that? God bless you. Okay, last question.
So I'm a seventh grader at American Leadership Academy, and And some of the teachers there give false information about politics and stuff, and I was wondering what a 13-year-old like me would do to stand up against the teachers that are giving false information.
First of all, thank you for being here on a Saturday. How great is that? Secondly, we got to start a Turning Point USA group at your high school, and so we're going to follow up with you right afterwards. Austin will help you with that. Side note, American Leadership Academy pretends to be really, really great on these issues, so I hope everyone in the Valley is listening to this. I've heard some very disturbing things, right, Liz? They always talk, oh, yeah, we teach things. Yeah, okay, sure. I hope that, you know, they get their act together. But here's the thing. You got to, early on in your life, you have to make a decision. Do I want to get good grades and be liked, or am I going to say things that are true and be courageous? You can't have both, okay? And so read as much as you can, listen to as many podcasts as you can, and then do not tell teachers what you believe. Just ask them what they believe. Just pepper them with questions. Where do you get that from? Why is that the case? Has that ever worked? You know, where are you? Why do you believe that? Questions is the best method of conversation, the best method of actually being able to get towards truth. James.
I think Charlie gave the best advice possible, so I won't add to what he said about what you need to do with your teachers and at your school. That was perfect. What I want to say is make sure you nourish and treasure and guard your relationship with your parents.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they want to tear apart. Don't let them do it. Stay tight with your parents. Talk to your parents about this. Tell them what the false information is and talk it through with people who can take it apart with you and remind you, make sure you know who you are as you grow up into who you're going to be. So strengthen and protect that relationship with your parents and treasure them and make sure that they can have those conversations. If you guys are here, make sure you're having those conversations with them. Thank you.
Yeah. That's awesome. We'll follow up. Honor your mother and father is the only one of the Ten Commandments that involves your country and involves a promise. Because it's not just honor your mother and father. It is honor your mother and father so that you may live long in the land of which you are in. It's very important. Okay, in summary, everyone at home, tpusa.com. And let's give it up one more time for Dr. James Lindsay. How great was he? Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.